are not going to walk away and plunge the country into chaos. We were elected to deal with these challenges, and that's what we will do.
Has Ed Miliband asked you to set out a timetable for your departure?
Well, I think Ed Miliband has dealt with this and made absolutely clear that he supports me.
What do you say to those in your party that are really upset with you, they don't think you're getting it, and they're calling for your resignation? What do you say to would-be challengers and the party? What's your message?
Well, I think it's very important that we don't sugarcoat these results, so I'm not going to do that. They are tough results, I accept that. They reflect voters who don't feel that their lives have changed enough or quickly enough, and that's been going on for a long time. We were elected to deal with that, and I'm not going to walk away from that responsibility and plunge the country into chaos.
This is my video update on this Friday afternoon, May the 8th, coming to you from Athens, Greece. Let's talk about some news. And let's talk about the elections in the UK. Local elections, mostly local elections, that took place in the UK yesterday. We still have some results which are coming in, I believe, mostly from London and Scotland and Wales are the remaining results that we are waiting for. But for the most part, what we have seen in the UK is the rise of Reform, a landslide victory for Farage and the Reform Party and Labour, 008 Starmer, the Tories, the Conservatives. They got absolutely smashed, completely destroyed in these elections. Reform, the big winner, the Greens did not do so well. Some analysts were predicting that the Greens would do better, but they did not have a good showing. I think most of the votes went to the Lib Dems instead of the Green Party. So the Greens ended up disappointing. I believe that's a correct read of things. But without a doubt, it was all about Reform and Farage. And they are the number one party now in the UK. So we have 008 Keir Starmer talking about the catastrophic, poor, pathetic showing of Labour. And Starmer's message to the people of the UK is that he is not going to step down. Nope. He's not going to step down, and he's not going to abandon the UK and leave it in a kind of chaos or type of power vacuum. Keir Starmer is going to stay on as Prime Minister of UK, as the leader of Labour. That was his first message to the people of Great Britain. He might change his mind. They might force him to change his mind. The party might tell Starmer, enough, it's time for you to go. But so far, he's digging in. He is digging in and saying he is going to stick around. He is going to remain as Prime Minister. Why not? He's 008 Keir Starmer, the most boring man in politics. And he still has some work to do on behalf of the globalists and the political establishment. He still has to integrate the UK back into the European Union. He has not finished completely reversing Brexit, so he still has that to do. And of course, we have Project Ukraine. He has to continue to get money to Le Gobelin Vert. He has to continue to pour money into the military-industrial complex. And maybe he can stick around until 2029. I believe that's when we have the next elections. And 2029 is the magic date, 29, 30, where we're supposed to get the big European-UK war against Russia. So maybe he's thinking, I'll try to stick around until then so that I can see the push for a war against Russia to its entirety. So that is the situation in the UK. I think Starmer's gone. That's my guess. That's my read of things. But who knows? Maybe he is going to remain as Prime Minister, even though his approval ratings at at what, 10%? 5%? 2% approval? What does he care? What does he care? So a big day for Farage and for Reform. Is Farage and Reform any different? A little bit. Probably not, but a little bit. Maybe more on domestic issues. They're different on foreign policy. I think Farage has kind of taken the position of Labour and the Conservatives. But maybe there are people in the Reform Party that do have a different take on foreign policy and would like the UK to focus more on domestic issues and just be done with all of these foreign policy adventures and all of the money wasted on Le Gobelin Vert. So that's the elections in the UK. We'll have more results as the day goes along. But let's now talk about Project Ukraine. And let's talk about hundreds of drones launched into Russia, launched towards Moscow. Fixed-wing drones. I don't know why I have such a hard time saying that. Fixed-winged drones. 260, 270 fixed-wing drones launched into Russia yesterday. After the May 8th ceasefire went into effect, after midnight, all the way up until today, till this morning, we had 260, 270 drones hitting all over Russia, including Moscow. And most of the drones were shot down. Some of the drones did some damage. Some of the debris of the drones did some damage. But the ceasefire that Russia declared for May 8th, 9th, and they've also extended it to the 10th, so it's now a three-day ceasefire. The ceasefire has started, and Ukraine has said that they couldn't care less about the ceasefire. They're not going to adhere to Russia's May 8th, May 9th, May 10th ceasefire. They're going to continue to send drones into the Russian Federation. Today, at least today, they're sending drones into Moscow. Now, May 9th is the Victory Day Parade, and the big event is going to take place in Moscow, though you're going to have many events and many parades taking place all over Russia. And even outside of Russia, you're going to have many May 9th Victory Day celebrations. But the Russian government, many Russian officials, have clarified that the big warning against Ukraine, the warning where they say that they are going to hit the center of Kiev, that warning is meant for Moscow. So there's some clarification there. If Ukraine sends drones into Moscow and tries to disrupt the Victory Day Parade in Moscow, that's when the retaliation into the center of Kiev will be triggered, most likely with an Oreshnik. But drones or attacks outside of Moscow on May the 9th, it is my understanding that those attacks are not going to trigger the big attack into the center of Kiev. It may trigger retaliation from the Russian military, but not specifically the strike into the center of Kiev. So at least we have some clarification there. For its part, the European Union, after hearing Maria Zakharova's warnings for diplomats to leave the center of Kiev, the European Union said, no way, we're not going anywhere. The fact that the EU is going to keep their diplomats there, the European Union and EU member states are going to remain in Kiev, leads me to believe that what we're most likely going to see tomorrow, if I had to take a guess as to how all of this is going to unfold, this is how I see it going. I think that Ukraine is going to launch NATO, the collective West Ukraine, Le Gobelin Vert, they're going to launch all kinds of drone strikes all throughout Russia. Big drone strikes throughout Russia, all over the place, except for Moscow. They're going to avoid Moscow, and this way it doesn't trigger strikes into the center of Kiev. But what it does do for the collective West is that it gives them a win. It does give them a diplomatic win in that they'll be able to narrative, a media win, because they'll be able to say that on Victory Day, they launched X amount of drone strikes into Russia and they did X amount of damage specifically on Victory Day to these oil facilities and to these military targets. So they can run with that narrative while at the same time pushing out the narrative that they ran all of these attacks. They launched all of these attacks into Russia and Russia has no ability to respond. They have no ability to retaliate. And that's going to be how they position the day, the events tomorrow. That's how I see this unfolding. If I had to take a guess, that's going to be their strategy. So you avoid the center of Kiev. You avoid that by not going specifically into Moscow, but you hit everywhere else, and you accomplish a type of a humiliation of the Kremlin in a way, right? You expose Russia once again as being weak, or you run with the narrative that Russia has no answer to the Ukrainian drones. And then you can say, you see, Ukraine is winning and they can attack all over Russia whenever they want, wherever they want, even on May 9th. That's gonna be my guess as to what's going to happen tomorrow. But I could be wrong. I've been wrong many, many times, and who knows? Maybe the collective West leaders, maybe they want to push it. Maybe they want to try to, maybe they believe that Russia's bluffing, and maybe they want to call Russia's bluff, and they decide, you know what? Let's launch drones into Moscow. Let's really try to stick it to Russia. Let's really try to expose and humiliate the Kremlin. That could be something that they do. I'm sure there are people in Europe, in NATO, in the United States that are definitely pushing for that, that definitely believe that even hitting Moscow, Russia wouldn't dare do anything to strike at Kiev, especially with diplomats in the city center. So they just might do that. The Green Goblin, he is warning diplomats and people that are going to be attending the May 9th Victory Day, leaders that are going to be attending in person on Red Square at the events, not to go. He posted a video message on his TikTok, Instagram, and X account. He actually said that Russia wants Ukraine's permission to hold their parade. So he actually said that. Amazing, Le Goblin Vert, the delusional Le Goblin Vert. But look, the information war, the media war, the actor-comedian, you see the scripts and the narratives they come up with, and a lot of people are going to buy into this. A lot of people are going to believe this. A lot of the media is going to pick this up, and they're going to run with it. Russia is asking Ukraine for permission to hold the Victory Day parade. So that's how he opens up his post on X. And then he says there are also messages from some states close to Russia that their representatives intend to be in Moscow, an odd desire at a time like this. We do not recommend it. We do not recommend it. That's a threat. That's a warning. If you're a leader of a country and you're planning on going to Red Square to attend May 9th, don't do it. Do not go. That's Le Goblin Vert. So Latvia, they are blaming the drones that landed on their empty oil storage facilities, the two drones that crashed right on the border with Russia, Ukrainian drones, which crossed over into Russia and then kind of crossed back into Latvia and landed on some unused storage depots. Latvia is blaming Russia for this, even though it is now agreed that those drones were Ukrainian drones launched by Ukraine, but Russia is still at fault. fault. This is what the Latvian Prime Minister Evika Silina said. It doesn't matter whose drones hit the oil depot in Latvia. The main thing is to remember Russia's responsibility for it. Russia is the aggressor. Doesn't matter if Ukraine is launching drones to hit into Russia, into the Leningrad Oblast, internationally recognized Russian territory. And if Ukraine is using our airspace to attack Russian territory, that doesn't matter. It is Russia's fault. It is Russia's fault. That is what the Latvian prime minister said in her statement. That's what she was getting at. And Latvia even took it one step further by summoning the Russian ambassador to the foreign ministry of Latvia and handing the Russian ambassador a note. They're very angry and very unhappy with Russia. They're angry and unhappy with Russia because Ukraine is using Latvian airspace to fire drones into Russian territory. So that's their complaint with Russia. That's their complaint to the ambassador of Russia in Latvia. Ushakov, the presidential aide, Putin's presidential aide, he issued a statement saying that the diplomacy between the United States, Russia, and Ukraine is pretty much done. It is over, finito. And the only thing that Ukraine can do going forward, if there's any chance of getting diplomacy back on track, is that that Ukraine take one serious step. That's a quote from Ushakov. And many people interpret that as Ushakov saying that Ukraine needs to remove its military from Donbas, maybe even remove its military from Zaporozhye and Kherson, from the Russian, from the new Russian territories, according to the Russian constitution. This is what Ushakov said could possibly get Russia, the United States, and Ukraine back to the negotiating table. Ukraine has to make a serious step, and most likely what Ushakov is saying is that, at a minimum, Ukraine has to withdraw its troops from Donbas. So we finally have the presidential aide to Putin finally making a statement and saying that the diplomacy was a bust. It went nowhere. That's pretty much what he's getting at. So no more Putin meeting with Witkoff or Kushner at midnight until 5 in the morning, meeting with them 8-9 times, having to stay up all night, talking with them for 5 or 6 hours, all of the statements about how the U.S. understands our interests and the U.S. understands our needs, and we believe in U.S. President Donald J. Trump, and all of that stuff. Is that stuff over now? Is it over? I don't think it's over. Something tells me that's still not over. But it does look like we're not going to get any more trilateral meetings, at least not in the near future. Ushakov did say that the United States is currently occupied with their war in the Middle East. So he did throw that out there. So maybe he's also hinting that if there is some sort of a resolution in the Middle East, which I don't see coming anytime soon, then maybe there's a way for the United States and Russia at least to start talking again. So that's Ushakov. That's his statement. The Financial Times, they are reporting that the European Union is very interested in preparing for talks with Russia. This is what the Financial Times is running with. EU prepares for potential talks with Vladimir Putin, says official European Council President Antonio Costa, says Bloc has Kiev's support for seeking to negotiate with the Russian president. So Costa, the sidekick to Ursula von der Pirate, he is saying that Zelensky has given his blessing for the EU to start to prepare for potential talks with Putin. That's code for the European Union will sit down with Russia if Russia decides to capitulate and surrender to the EU and to Le Gobelin Vert. If Russia decides to do that, then Costa is saying, sure, we'll sit at the table and we'll accept Russia's capitulation. That's basically what this Financial Times article is saying. That's it. So let's talk about the Iran war. A lot of strange things happening yesterday in the Iran war. A lot of fog of war taking place in the Iran war, which is supposed to be in a state of a ceasefire. But yesterday, that ceasefire was definitively broken. But President Trump claims that the ceasefire is still ongoing. So yesterday, we have conflicting reports. Let's start from the U.S. side. The U.S. says that they attacked Iran after Iran attacked three Navy destroyers. And when they mean attacked Iran, they went after the ships, the boats that were going after these destroyers, as well as attacking various parts of Iran, the mainland, missile strikes into Iran. So the U.S. claims that they did this after the three Navy destroyers were targeted by the Iran military. Now, Iran claims that they attacked three U.S. Navy destroyers after the U.S. attacked the Iranian mainland. So those are the conflicting reports. U.S. military just carried out strikes on Iran's Keshem port and Bandar Abbas, senior U.S. officials tell me, but this is not a restarting of the war. So those are the areas, the port and the areas inside Iran that were definitely hit. The U.S. did attack these facilities, these areas. The U.S. claims they attacked these areas after Iran attacked them. Iran says that these areas were attacked, and then they attacked the three Navy destroyers. Trump is saying that whatever strikes did take place were just a love tap. That is a direct quote. President Trump tells me in a phone call, the retaliatory strikes against Iranian targets are just a love tap. It's just a love tap. That's the quote. When I asked if it means the ceasefire is over, no, the ceasefire is going. It's in effect. That's also a quote from U.S. President Trump speaking to the ABC News reporter. So something interesting happened yesterday. Saudi Arabia and Kuwait, they reversed their position with regards to the use of their airspace and their military bases. They decided that the United States can now use their airspace and their military bases. So they blocked Project Freedom. I talked about this yesterday in my video update, and now they have reversed their position to allow Project Freedom to go on. And the U.S. can use Saudi airspace, it can use Kuwait airspace, and it can use that airspace and those military bases to launch attacks against Iran, and that is exactly what happened. Which means that what I said yesterday about Project Freedom, that Project Freedom was not so much about guiding ships through the Strait of Hormuz, but its real purpose was about launching strikes into Iran, proved to be true. Because the minute that the United States got the permission to use the airspace, the strikes happened. We started to get more attacks into Iran. We started to get the escalation yesterday. Of course, the United States claims that this is not a restarting of the war. Keep in mind that that the Trump administration, they also claim that the Project Freedom is completely separate from Operation Epic Fury, and Rubio claims that Operation Epic Fury is over. So Operation Epic Fury over, done with, a huge success. And I guess now we are on Project Freedom, full speed ahead with Project Freedom, now that they have the air bases. And they can use the air bases And so the United States can now launch attacks every now and then, whenever it feels like launching attacks, and they can just chip away at Iran's infrastructure when they feel like it. They can hold the blockade. They can talk about the ceasefire still being there. They can talk about negotiations still ongoing, and they can try to keep this thing going. And every week or two, they can use Saudi airspace to fire attacks into Iran. And Iran retaliated by going after the UAE. So they started to strike at the UAE yesterday. So that's where we are with everything that is going on in Iran. Let me read you a post from two statements from Trump, a statement from Trump and a post on Truth Social. So Trump was asked about the escalation yesterday when he was speaking to the media. He once again said that that the ceasefire is still holding. But he also said if Iran does not sign any type of deal or sign the U.S.'s terms for an end to the war, then we could see Iran glowing. That could be the U.S.'s retaliation against Iran if they do not agree to the United States' terms. If there's no ceasefire, you're just going to have to look at one big glow coming out of Iran. They better sign the agreement fast. If they don't sign, they're going to have a lot of pain. So a glow obviously means a nuclear strike, right? Why else would you describe it as a glow? So that's Trump's latest threat, a serious threat. From the U.S. president, a dangerous, crazy threat, but he's putting it out there. Not the first time he's hinted at some sort of a nuclear strike against Iran. But his point, the point that he was trying to make to the media was that the ceasefire is holding. If there is no ceasefire, he said, if the ceasefire breaks and we don't have a deal in place with Iran and there's no negotiated settlement, then Trump was saying that the United States would launch such a devastating strike into Iran, most likely a nuclear strike, and all of Iran would be glowing. And Trump posted on Truth Social quite a long post about the Navy destroyers. I'm not going to read you the entire post. The interesting part is that Trump claims that the three Navy destroyers, they successfully transited out of the Strait of Hormuz. They transited under fire, according to Trump, but they made it out of the Strait of Hormuz. What are three U.S. Navy destroyers doing in the Strait of Hormuz? I haven't quite understood what he means by that. But he said they were under fire, and then the U.S. military came in, and they destroyed all of the military assets of Iran that were firing on these destroyers, And then Trump, he said that the drones came and were incinerated while in air. The Iranian drones, they were destroyed while they were in the air that were trying to attack the Navy destroyers. And check this out. He said, they dropped ever so beautifully down to the ocean, very much like a butterfly dropping to its grave. Did Trump really write that? Did Trump really, really write that? It doesn't sound like Trump wrote that. It sounds like an English literature major who's an intern at the White House wrote that line. I don't know. That is a weird line. Yeah, Trump talks about how missiles were trying to hit the destroyers. Then the drones came in, but the U.S. military knocked all of those things down. The drones, the missiles were knocked down, and they dropped ever so beautifully down to the ocean, very much like a butterfly dropping to its grave.
Okay. Okay, the CIA, according to the Washington Post, they delivered an analysis to the White House where they conclude that Iran can survive the U.S. naval blockade for at least 3 to 4 months before facing severe economic hardship. This is according to CIA analysis. 3 to 4 months, that's how long Iran can survive this blockade. So that means Trump needs to keep this charade going for 3 to 4 months. We're close to a deal. We're not close to a deal. We're close to a deal. We're not close to a deal. Oil goes up. Oil goes down. We've destroyed Iran. They have no navy, no army, no leadership, no nothing. We're going to meet with their leadership tomorrow. They have boats and speedboats that are trying to hit our destroyers. He's going to keep this charade going, this back and forth, up and down, left and right, charade going for 3 to 4 more months. Really? Is that what the CIA is trying to tell us? Well, at least all the traders are going to be very happy. That means they have three to four more months to continue to make bank. three to four months of more short selling and trading on Trump's Truth Social announcements. Some people are going to be very, very happy. And speaking about the traders that are making money off of this Iran war, or at least the statements and posts about the Iran war, we have news that the U.S. State Department, they sent a memo out to employees telling the employees of the U.S. State Department to not make bets on the Iran conflict. Yep, they said that as employees of the government, you have information, you're privy to certain classified information, and if you make bets on that information, on Polymarket and these types of betting platforms, then you could face serious consequences. So don't do it. That was the message from the U.S. State Department. Because the problem is the employees at the U.S. State Department, right? It's the person who has a desk in the corner. It's that State Department employee with the desk on the second floor in the corner that decided to bet $960 million to do a short on oil for $960 million and then made a profit of $125 million. That's the guy, the State Department employee that made that bet. They're the problem, right? Okay. So anyway, that's the memo and the warning that was sent out. Let's do a clown world and we can wrap this video up. So Rubio, he is in Italy. He met with the Pope. He's also meeting with Meloni today. But Rubio met with the Pope yesterday and he presented the Pope with a gift. He told the Pope, what gift can I give to the man that has everything? That's what he told Pope Leo. Pope Leo, I believe, also gave a gift to Marco Rubio. But the gift that Rubio presented to Pope Leo was a crystal football. A crystal football. Small little crystal football. Not a big crystal football, but a small football. American football. Not football, World Cup, FIFA. American football. That's what he presented to Pope Leo. I don't know, maybe Pope Leo's a football fan. But that's the gift that he gave to Pope Leo. Pope Leo's response to the gift from Rubio was, wow, really? That's what the Pope said. I said, wow, okay. Wow, okay. You got me a small little crystal football. Anyway, that was interesting. An interesting exchange between Rubio and Pope Leo. And finally, we have the European Commission
posting on X that it is ready to take on the memes that are critical of the Commission and of the European Union. The European Commission is ready to fight the meme wars. And they posted on X, the battle of narratives is going strong. Our countries are a recurring target. It is time to act, to tell the stories that make us strong. Let's live our own story, protect what matters, our democracy. Our democracy. Okay. Let's protect our democracy, European Union. Okay. That's pretty funny. But they have a photo of some guy who doesn't have the tinfoil hat, doesn't have the glasses. And you see a picture of Paris, beautiful, clean, peaceful Paris. And then he puts on the tinfoil hat and the glasses. And you can see a Paris in darkness, in chaos, in dirt, in dirt and disarray. So what we need to do as the European Commission is to show the truth, which is the top photo panels, the clean, beautiful, organized, safe Paris. That's the truth. The tinfoil hat is the other Paris that the destructive forces are pushing out there in this social media meme war. Okay. We believe you, European Commission. We will not wear the tinfoil hat and the glasses. We will present the true story of Europe, of the European Union, the prosperous, rich, thriving story of the European Union under the command of the democratically elected Ursula von der Leyen. Okay. Anyway, that's the video, everybody. Did I say like, share, subscribe? I don't know if I said like, share, subscribe. I don't think I did. Maybe I did. I forgot. Anyway, like, share, subscribe. And if you got any hypes, hit this video up with a hype. If you're watching this from your mobile device, watching the YouTube video from your mobile device, you get 3 hypes a week. And go to the Durant Shop. We have a special going on, 30% off t-shirts on the Durant Shop. The link is in the description box down below. Also, check us out on Substack as well. Alexander wrote a good article for Substack and for locals as well. So you'll see that article from Alexander. It's on Iran, an off-ramp for the Iran war. And I will see everybody tomorrow. Take care.